Oh, I think this might be our caller that we're expected. Good evening, caller. You're in the air.
Yes. Hi. This is Harry Glorikian.
Yeah.
A few minutes early.
Yeah. No. That is fine. We were just discussing a little bit about some issues, and until you called in. So, I know I don't want to mess up your last name because it's a very unique. Harry's easy for me to remember, but the last name is going to be hard to. What? I know it was supposed to be an hour interview, and I had to cut it down to half an hour at 7:30. We'll get off talking about you, but I won't go as long as I would like about your history, how I normally work my programs. I like to learn about a person before I talk about the topic. So instead of the half an hour about you, let's just learn about 5 minutes or so about you, and then we'll jump straight into Medicine Ball.
No problem. Whatever works for you works for me.
Okay. So your last name once again. So I know his first name is Harry. Last name is?
Glorikian.
Glorikian. So Mr. Glorikian, where did you attend your higher learning schools? And then we'll go from there.
So I got my master's degree from Boston University.
Okay, I was supposed to go to that school. I'm glad I didn't, only because your school is huge. Your school is, I went to Xavier in Cincinnati, so it's much smaller than Boston, that's for sure.
Yep, and then I went straight into industry after that. So, actually, I shouldn't say that. I was in industry before that. I graduated from San Francisco State with a degree in biology.
Okay.
And then I went into industry.
What made you choose biology over? Did you know from high school when you graduated high school that was going to be your major when you went to Boston?
Oh God, I think originally it was like, oh, maybe I'll be a doctor, and then you figured out like, oh my God, how much school? No. We got to find something easier. And so ended up doing my degree in biology, and then. It was the early 90s when the country was in a recession, and I was trying to find a job, and I thought I was going to be in the lab, and I ended up on the business side, and then stayed on the business side pretty much my whole life, but always had the passion for the science side of it. So I'm always sort of one foot in one world and one foot in the other world and trying to bring them both together.
And when, with the difference that you saw in the business side compared to, you still had to associate yourself a lot with the doctors and different trade shows and conferences, didn't you?
Yes. And so actually it was interesting because like my first job, they were like, I remember my boss came to me like a day into the job and he's like, hey, listen, you got to go give a talk in 2 weeks. I'm like, a talk? I'm like, what am I going to give a talk about? And it was this area in pathology, and I was like, I don't, I just got here. He's like, well, you better go back in the lab and learn. And so I went in the back in the lab, and I learned the process, and it was a brand new technique. So nobody in the world knew it very well. And so I went out there and started teaching it and got, you know, understood it better and better and better. And I think over the course of that time of my career, I must have taught, you know, 200 different courses in that one area over time.
And this is mostly to doctors or just individuals in the business?
It was to physicians in that area and then the technicians that did the work in that area. But I was always sort of straddling
defense.
The technology part of it, and then like how do you use it in the real world, and so that ended up accidentally being a sweet spot.
Okay, so after X amount of years in your industry, what made you take that next step on towards the money ball?
So I had the, you know, the pleasure of working on the Human Genome Project, and, you know, that involves a lot of data, obviously, in figuring out, you know, somebody's genomic information and you know, once I saw that we were moving healthcare towards electronic health records and that we were digitizing the world of health, because I'm sure, as you remember, if you walked into your doctor's office before, it would be all file folders, right?
Yeah.
Every patient had their own file folder.
Yeah.
Well, now that's all in a computer.
On a laptop and computer, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and once it's in a computer, you can do all sorts of interesting things with the data. Trying to do that with file folders is it's extremely difficult, if not impossible. So once I saw that transformation starting to take place, it was like, wow, this is going to completely change everything in healthcare. And so, you know, Moneyball started to get written about how data was going to change everything in healthcare. And the way that I look at it is, look at how data has changed every other industry. Healthcare is not going to be hugely different in a lot of ways.
Okay. So with everyone weighing in on the ongoing corona pandemic, as a thorough leader at the intersection of healthcare and technology, what do you see as the biggest impact technology has in that crisis?
So, I mean, the big shifts have been, you know, how quickly we could sequence that bug or that virus.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, if you think about it and you go back in time, like when SARS virus came around almost two decades ago, it took almost 6 months to get the full sequence. And, you know, now we did this new virus in, I believe the sequence was available in 4 days.
Okay.
So, and then if I'm not mistaken, the first company that created a therapy, or at least in a, you know, the first trial for a therapy, they did that 4 days after that. So that's a huge time difference compared to what it had been at, you know, back in the day.
Yeah, but to actually to compare SARS to the COVID-19, do you think that you're saying it took about 6 months for us to even understand SARS, but I don't think it killed as many people, did it? Well, I wasn't really studying it two decades ago, but I was just
no different.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, different virus. This virus has some very unique features. You know, in other words, you know, somebody can carry it around with them for say up to 2 weeks and
yeah.
not show any symptoms.
Correct.
You know, and the way that it gets transferred, it seems to transfer quite efficiently.
Yeah, like by touching items, and you're not even
well breathing. Touch,
yeah, well, that's true too. That's even worse. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. So those characteristics of this virus make it harder to manage. So if you look at a disease like Ebola, right, which is, you know, it's not a nice disease, but it transfers by physical contact.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you could sort of figure out who's got it and corral them and stop them from contacting people, that's one thing. This thing, you know, if I had it, I could be walking around for 2 weeks and not even know I had it and be passing it on to other people.
Mm.
So that makes it difficult to manage and control. But, you know, I know we're saying that it's deadly, but my problem is from a data perspective, we haven't tested enough people for us to know what the...
I agree.
You know, yeah. when we're doing the math and the numerator and the denominator and trying to do the math, we don't have the right numbers to put in that formula.
Because normally they're just testing people and when they get the symptoms instead of just having a mass testing. I had a back and forth with some of my classmates because I have a WhatsApp, and I'm trying to understand how you can go and purchase an over-the-counter pregnancy test quicker than you can't even purchase a test to test yourself on COVID-19.
Well, so one of the issues is like the, you know, we were late, at least in the U.S., from getting the test out, which was a huge problem. Now we got to get the tests out there. And the test that we're doing that you do in the lab is not what you would do with a pregnancy test.
Mm-hmm.
So the that would be more like an antibody test. And, you know, we got to make sure that those antibody tests are give you the right answer because we don't want people getting the wrong answer. But I would tell you that to put the country back to work,
that's the main thing.
You're gonna need to test.
Yeah, I'm trying to understand. Maybe you can help me. How Korea, South Korea, not North, did so many testing compared to America?
Well, first of all, remember Korea learned its lesson during the Middle Eastern respiratory syndrome situation that they had. The government did not move fast enough.
Okay.
And it caused people to vote very differently because they thought that their government was not
prepared,
you know, managing the situation well. So they learned that lesson and said, we are not going to make that mistake again. The other thing is, you know, understanding people's location through their cell phone, who was, you know, obeying quarantine, who was not obeying quarantine. They managed that very well.
I heard that with the cell phones was in China. I didn't know that South Korea did the same thing.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, we have some friends, actually, who used to live in Brooklyn that are now working in South Korea. Oh. And, you know, they were like, nope. They told us we got to stay home. Schools are closed. Everything is moving to online learning. And we got to wear, you know, masks when we leave the house. And that was probably a month before they really started pushing people inside here.
Mm-hmm. Well, not to change the topic a little bit, but something in more of a non-serious item. I think South Korea is going to be the first one that's going to have sports play because they're planning on how to play their baseball league without people, without fans. And I think they're looking to start in like 3 weeks. And now the Major League Baseball is looking to follow suit on the same way. But they jumped ahead and knowing that they're going to have sports, I think, within 3 weeks. They're going to have live sports.
Yeah, I mean, I think right now there's got to be people, and I'm sure there is thinking about how do you start things up again, considering this is not necessarily going to go away tomorrow. How do you test people to figure out who had the virus? And we're assuming they're not going to get it again, that they've developed an immunity to it, so maybe they can go back to work. But there is a lot of people working on either figuring out how to repurpose a drug, so a drug that already exists that might work against this. And then there's a lot of people working on, can I create a therapy, an antibody-based therapy that can protect people or cure people against this? And actually, I did an interview with a company called Distributed Bio on my podcast, and they just released some data showing that their antibodies look like they're working. So if somebody repurposes a drug, we could have something in the next month or two. If it's one of these antibody therapies, we could have it by September. Mm. And then ultimately, somebody will come out with a vaccine, but that will take at least 12 months.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, that's what they said when they first started, 12 months to 18 months. How does...
Yeah, because you got to remember, like, a vaccine takes a long time to... Because you're going to give it to a lot of people, and you want to make sure that the vaccine isn't worse
than the disease.
Yeah.
With the cure and Moneyball medicine, how does the data help doctors with the virus or vaccination?
So the way that, I mean, if you think about from a data perspective, is actually, it's funny because I was just interviewing some of the guys working at Distributed Today, next episode, which was, how's this data like really helping? And they're like, you know, once we had the data, like we could start to look at the SARS therapy, because there is a SARS antibody therapy, and they were able to, in 2 months, do 6 million different variations of that. And out of the 6 million variations, start to, you know, nail it down to which one of those will actually affect, have the highest probability of effect on coronavirus.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, to get there in 2 months or 2.5 months, that's unbelievable. And that's all driven by, you know, computers, data, machine learning, and you know, systematically then testing it in the lab. But you're not going to test 6 million. Most of that is going to be done data-driven. And it's that data that helps you understand how to develop that next therapy quicker. And then on the other side, you know, on the testing data, it tells us where in the country we need to send, you know,
the ventilators
equipment.
And, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think about it like if you're fighting a fire or fighting a war and you don't know where the fires are, you don't know where to send the firefighters. You don't know how bad the fire is. You don't know where to send the equipment. So how do you fight the fire if you're blind?
Mm-hmm. Do you feel
so the data helps you tremendously?
The data from New York, are you using mostly that because that's now the hot spot in America, or is there a new place like Louisiana or Miami that's coming online that you're getting a lot of the data from?
Well, the data, right? I mean, the most transparent, I think, at this point is probably New York. But, you know, one of the issues is all hospitals do not have to report the data.
Mm.
So there are rules that we've had in place that we might need to change. You know, just because we did it that way before doesn't mean...
Yeah. But do you think
we should keep doing it the same way?
Do you think if you call some of these CEOs of the various hospitals across the country and explain why you need the data, because they're probably looking at the normal average person is like, yeah, right, what are they going to use the data for? Not understanding that it could help with the virus or the vaccination.
Well, I think the CEOs know that, but I think what you need to do is from a federal government level, the CDC has to say, I need all your data. I need all your positives, all your negatives. I need all that. I need every day at the end of the day, I need somebody at your hospital to call it in or punch in the numbers into this website or whatever the best way for them to communicate. But it has to come from the federal level so that you pull all the data into one place.
Mm. How do you see the next 2 or 3 months as an expert in the field, where do you see Moneyball, whether helping other doctors, or where do you see Moneyball in the next 2 to 3 months because of all this data that you need to assist?
So I see, I mean, it's already, you know, if you think about it, it's helping on a lot. I mean, it is being implemented very, very slowly in a lot of places, but sort of the testing is going to help figure out, you know, where the issues are. The testing is going to help figure out who could possibly go back to work because they've already been infected. And, you know, the assumption is that they're not going to get infected again.
Mm-hmm.
The data is going to help figure out which are the therapies that we might be able to put into play sooner rather than later. But if you think about all the other places, like, you know, right now, if a doctor can't leave their house and a patient can't leave their house, how are they going to communicate with each other? Well, telemedicine is going to be
big.
One of the ways they're going to do that.
Yeah.
You know, I was just reading a piece on how they've loosened the rules. And so let's say you needed to have a test looked at by a doctor. And it's a pathology test. Right now, they just loosened the rules so that a doctor would be able to look at that from home over a secure connection and make a diagnosis. So all these things are, you know, there were rules put in place where you couldn't do this before. Mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden all these rules are starting to be lifted because...
Yeah. Yep. And I don't think...
you know...
Yeah, not only in medicine, but a lot of other places also that I don't want to switch the topic to. But yeah, but you're right. Telemedicine is going to have a lot of leeway now compared to how it was before.
But think about the difference, right? I mean, in everything else, it's not a life or death sort of dynamic. And here we're, you know, you're seeing a whole business model change driven by the data. Because now all of a sudden, that doctor doesn't need to be in the same town or in the same state. It could be, they could be all the way across the country, technically.
Yeah. And then, I guess, aside from science, where else do you see big data helping during the current and future pandemic?
Well, I'm super focused on the science side. So I would say, like, in future pandemics, I would say we really need to have, a higher level of surveillance, like on the being able to sequence these bugs quickly, have that technology available sort of on a distributed scale, so that if we notice things like this, we can get to it faster. Mm-hmm. Now, that said, if a country that develops a disease does not tell everybody else, you know, then you can have all the technology in the world. Yeah. If you don't know what's coming.
That's right. I was following this in China from December when I first heard about it. But I was like, this, when you see Wuhan was shut down, I was like, that's serious. I was like, this isn't no joke. When you see a whole city and they're telling people not to come into the city and people that's in the city can't leave, I was like, this is no joke. But I guess we sat down and it really, and I think,
well, it's not even a city. Mm-hmm. 57 million people. That's not a city, right? by our standards, yeah. Right? That's like a little country.
Yeah.
I think they knew
about it before December. They had to know about it before December.
You know, you remember all those sci-fi movies you've ever seen?
Yeah.
What happens, right?
Yeah.
The scientist is yelling in the background, hey, hello, you know, this really bad thing is going to happen. And everybody that's in power says, you know, step to the side.
Yeah,
you know,
the boy who cried wolf.
Exactly. And then all of a sudden, you know, Godzilla shows up and they're like, okay, where's that guy? Get him back in the room. Let's figure this out, right?
Yep.
And it's typical. It is typical. And I do understand, you know, somebody who's running a country or whatever is trying to weigh the decisions of where do I lean? Where do I go? But the example is South Korea, you know, under that last Mediterranean respiratory syndrome, they didn't move fast enough. People voted and changed, you know, got new leadership. And under this new leadership, they're like, no, we're not going to do that again.
I mean,
and they moved a lot
faster. How professional they were by having testing, by driving by instead of coming into the hospital and stuff. That was just so well done and well planned.
Well, and to be quite honest, I think if we had more testing available here,
and here
you
is
could have
America.
Made better decisions.
And here,
yes.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Yes, in the United States, you.
Well, same here in the U.S. Virgin Islands. We have a problem with testing, also.
Well, look, nobody runs their business without data, right? That product is profitable. That product is losing money. You run a business by data, and so if you're not testing and you don't know how to manage the situation, you're not going to make, you just can't make the best decisions. So it's critical to sort of drive what you're going to do next.
Yeah. Well, I'm running. I didn't take my break because I know I wanted to get as much as you as possible in here. And I'm running close to the end. I'm going to act. I have a co-host. I didn't introduce him at the beginning. I apologize. His name is Ras Aija. Ras Aija, do you have any questions for Harry? Because I can't say his last name. I don't want to butcher it.
Good evening. good evening, sir. I must say, welcome to the 90.9 FM station. And it's a privilege having you on the air that we could, at least, let the public get some...
Pleasure to be here.
Yeah. But listen, I had one question for you. Do you know anything about Taiwan in terms of the virus?
I can't say that I have been on top of what's been going on in Taiwan. No, so
he's a master Googler, so maybe that.
Yeah, well, let me just cut it short though. They jump on it quick. From early December, China notified the World Health Organization that they had a high case pneumonia, and Taiwan right away jump on it. They start to screen everybody that come to their territory. They have 77 cases and. Let me tell you something, no debt. Yeah, so I was just...
Yeah, no. Yeah, and you know, the problem is I don't know if there's 77 cases or there's more or less.
Well, that's what's on the internet, though. I don't know how correct. Would you know otherwise, but that's what's on the internet.
Yes. Yeah, so, you know, if you see what's happening in Italy... Or, you know, what here in the U.S. starting to give you a better idea of how bad this is from a virus perspective. But if you think about it, if you had enough masks and you had enough protective gears and you had enough respirators, you know, you could manage this pretty well, right? I mean, you're still going to have people die. That's just, but. There's a lot of people that wouldn't have to die if you had everything, you know, if you had the right equipment to give to the soldiers, they would be able to fight the war more effectively, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and the soldiers would be the front line.
Well, I understand clearly what you're saying. Yeah. You're saying the same thing I'm saying. You're saying that we need more testing. I'm telling you that Taiwan jumped on it right away in December when they heard of the pneumonia cases, and they check everybody coming their borders. I think this is a great step in a way of at least curtailing it, though.
Well, Harry.
Yeah.
I want to thank you so much.
Yeah, but it's been a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure talking to you. I'm going to see if I could try and squeeze you in another time, and I'll let Helen, I'll thank her so much. Thank Teresa very much, and I'll work with her to see if I could squeeze you in another time next week or the following week, okay?
Excellent. I appreciate it. You guys be safe.
Yeah, same to you, sir. All right, that was Harry out in the States. We'll be right back after these few messages.